Fonzie Driscoll, and you're listening to Talking Schmidt.
Hey,
Talking Schmidt.
I'm already not watching.
It's cool, like tonight is the night.
Damn, this is like the coolest thing I'm ever gonna do.
I wouldn't say it was fun.
What do you mean? Well, Christian Fletcher's younger brother.
Fuck the Dodgers.
Oh, big dog's in. What do you think, Dolan?
John Schmidt.
Talking Schmidt.
Alpha Macaroni.
Most of these guys, their opinion don't matter.
Talking Schmidt, right?
It's skateboarding.
I remember that.
Talking Schmidt.
What are Yuns doing?
Holy shit.
Skateboarding homies.
No, Schmidt, you can't jump in.
What is happening?
I'm here for Greg Smith. Yay!
Gregory.
Yes, we are.
Wi-Fi check one, Wi-Fi check two.
Do you remember this line of Toad skating these hills has become like it's resurfaced and people have used a lot of it for inspiration. Toad and I were just out on the streets the other night and one of the GX guys came up and he was like, that line. And Toad's like, dude, Hanzi filmed it.
Yeah.
So I never knew that. That's fucking hot, dude.
Yeah. I've corrected people on Instagram with posts because it gets reposted.
Me too.
They're like, John Minor filming. I was like, no, dude, that's my filming. Filming. You're Miguel in it. And it's just Toad and I, and Toad had that spot mapped out, or at least you were looking at it.
I so looked at it for many years before that.
Yeah, we went and there like, for that.
I always thought it was like lame and too snowboardy for people because it was kind of snowboard inspired, you know? And I thought, like, I never wanted to take Mike there anymore because I was like, oh, they're going to hate this. They're going to think this is lame. And then I was like, maybe Hanzi will be into filming it. And then, we were going out on missions a lot back then, too. We would take Jaya's. That was Jaya's camera, right?
Yeah, there's a good story about that. Toad and I had this like epic, maybe it was like a half a year. I don't know. Maybe it was a whole year. But there was like this chapter of SF where Jaya was transferring over to photography and the new 3-chip camera that was just the baby and taken everywhere, all of a sudden was being just sitting there over in the corner, fully charged. And so Toad and I were, there was a chapter of time when Toad and I were just out there filming and we were filming everything like Toad just said. So we were like getting like there was like, there'd just be obstacles. Like there was a power line pole they were put up on Hate Street. So we just stopped and skated that. And I got kickflip power line pole ride. And Toad dropped in on it and slammed really hard because his front wheels peeled off the wrong way and he fell backside on that baby. And we started skating, like getting real creative because, like Toad said, it wasn't the video shoot. It wasn't like a video shoot. It wasn't like the thing that you were thinking about getting. It was like this pressure. I want to go get the big gap or the do-to-do or the big ollie. But we're just out there skating.
Yeah, you were documenting your day more so than like, we got to get this gnarly trick. It was just like, if that happens, it's going to happen organically. But we're just going out to skate today and we want to film our day.
Yes.
Yeah, it was more like that. I think, remember Hanzi, I think you were too, but we were inspired by the Avenue video because a lot of people were just skating tricks. And like, I was like, dude, I like to just skate random shit. You know, like, and roll. Actually, rolling is like a big part of skateboarding that like was overlooked at the time, and sliding and stuff. And remember the Avenue video, Hanzi?
Dude, Joe and Sean and Adrenaline, we had this like, we both loved each other. So like we'd see Sean and Joe and they'd be like, what up? And we'd be like, what up? And we both respected each other's camps.
So
a ton, and we'd like stop and talk and vibe out and stuff, and then they'd get some crazy weird shit, and then we would be like, I'm gonna get some weird ass shit around the city. It's original.
It made me feel like it was okay to like my thinking was like validated at that point because it wasn't usually, I mean, the trick, the ledge and the trick and the gap were like what was going on. It wasn't like free flowing, you know? And so it was like, I don't know, it inspired me to like be like, oh, I'm not so crazy. You know?
Yeah, really cool. It's really cool that it's standing the test of time, and it's like Joe Valdez like went down in history. Like when it was going down, it was just, we thought it was just some freaky small time. We didn't, you know, it wasn't like Danny Way or Day One. It wasn't like what was going down in the Plan B videos and this, that. We thought we were just kind of doing some kind of like crazy, wacky stuff on the side, but it, lo and behold, skating loves it forever. It's really cool.
Yeah. Have you seen like the dime contest and how much love they give to Joe Valdez up in the Canada thing?
That's cool.
They love that dude. Like they had him come out like a wrestler, like it's Joe Valdez. And everyone's like,
oh, no way.
Yeah, it's fucking amazing. What other stuff were you a part of that you were maybe there for or that you filmed? Like Toad and I were talking about, there's so much shit that Jaya did that was insane. Like the nose slide, I think it's either Washington or Sacramento Street, like on a hill, that he did the whole fucking thing. And nobody's really come to that since. Like it's so early to this day. But like, were you there for that? Were you there for some other things that stand out to you that are like, oh, wait, hold on. This thing was insane.
Definitely that, the Golden Gate Bridge that Mike talked about in your interview, I was the only other guy there. I was on the Golden Gate Bridge Jaya experience.
Wow.
Yeah, that was wild. And also when you said earlier about how if we knew that our skate group was different, one of the first things that happened that made me realize that this is that we are maybe a little bit different. I was there when I drove down from Lake of the Pines, Grass Valley with Cardiel to when he laid back so innated the gongs. I was there.
Wow.
And when Henry ran up, Henry was my hero. I had the first Henry board, dude. I just loved, dude, that real ad of him doing the nose pick tail grab at night down the rail. Oh, dude, that was just like, that's my heart. I love Henry. And so when Henry ran up to John and gave him a high five after the back, so in 80, I was like, wait, what? I was like, and then I was looking at John and I was like, John is different. He is like, it was like this moment of like, whoa, dude. Okay. Yeah. Cardiel is Cardiel. Like it's not just our homie and just, we just all know him. He's like special, very special.
He's the best. I mean, so much shit for a guy that didn't, I mean, did he ever live in San Francisco? I don't think so. Did he?
It was more of like a drive down and get it.
Yeah, but they got Cardiel Gap, Cardiel Ledge. Like, you seen what he did at Miley. Like, John put a stamp on that early on some stuff that's like, you know, undeniable. And then it's like getting, I think he was the third person to get Skater of the Year. I think it went Tony Hawk, Danny Way, and then John.
I was there for the Gons backwards, too. I'm in the picture.
Wow.
If you look at the picture in Big Brother of him just stretched out, ollieing it, I'm in the bottom holding the flash. Tobin had me hold the flash in the photo, and the flash didn't go off. So I'm just holding this flash. And
for what photo was that?
The Gons backwards.
Oh, John did it too, right?
John did it, and then Scott Bourne almost died trying it.
Whoa.
Was there ever footage of John doing that? Because I always wondered what happened. No,
this is really long time ago. So it was just like Tobin was get the camera out and get it, you know?
Because I just listened to a Tobin interview, and he talks about it. and he didn't give much like insight to it. And I was like, I don't know, you were there. So that's like, did he land and just ollie off and landed afterwards?
He pulled it. So it's such a big gap that he landed full compression, you know, not just like landing and ollie. He landed, squatted and cardioed out, dude, full squats, stretched it so far, landed full squat. And then as he rolled off the edge, because he can't go forward, you'll just die or run into it. Awesome with the wall.
Yeah.
So you have to land and go off the side. And so he's full squat as he's coming off because he couldn't lift up to come off. He was just rolling off full squat. His kingpin caught and he got pitched and somehow he cardio rolled or just freaking somehow he survived it. But he ollied that. And I remember when Scott Bourne ollied it, I was actually like angry at Scott because I wasn't angry at Scott. I was angry that someone else, that someone thought that they could do something that John could do, that thinking that things John can do are just hard to do. Like, I was like, I love Scott and I was friends with him at the time, but I was upset that he thought he could do something that John could like only do, basically. Like, I, in my mind, like, John's skating wasn't something that you just tried with him and stuff. Something in my, what I'm getting at was that was John, dude. You didn't want to try and ollie the gons backwards with him, dude. I was down there with the flash. I was like, clearly, like, this, like, John is like superhuman capabilities, dude.
He was trying it the same day with him?
No, John, Scott tried it later. And he literally almost died. Footage of it.
Was John in Big Brother? Was there a photo of it?
Yeah, he was. He got an interview in one of the early Big Brothers, and Tobin helped with that. And John took me for the ride for that.
Is that the one where he kind of talks shit on snowboarding?
It's pretty kind of loose interview. That I think that it was like in sections, and it seemed kind of like an entertainment piece, and a kind of like how Big Brother was kind of going for that, like, kind of, it was just so, it's like,
yeah, shock value.
Shock value.
Yeah. Oh man, dude, were you at the session? There was a session that I was just watching the video footage the other day. It's like Jamie Thomas is there, Gons, I think it was when Gons kickflipped it, and Drhobo's trying a 360 ollie over it. And like, there's, it's a huge session, tons of people down there. Was Drhobo and Pales and them living on that street when you were there?
Yeah, I loved that. Yeah.
It was like, who was it? Was O'Brien?
O'Brien and Greg.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gregoire.
Yeah. Yeah.
Dude, so sick. Do you want to talk at all about like the kit stuff and like, I don't know, I always talk about our fallen bros, like Phil, Kit, Jaya. There's so many dudes that we lost too early and how that kind of impacted you.
Definitely. I've been thinking about it a lot recently because, I mean, you know, being older and stuff and hindsight and all that, it was so rough to like keep to act like we're still just fired up and keep going. You know, it was like Strubing and Jai were on this house and it was just like kicking ass and we were just getting stuff. And then one of your homies dies and it was like, keep going. And looking back on it, if I could do it again or if I could give advice to younger skaters that go through it, what I would do now is I would have a morning session. Like, I'd let it all out, like in the morning, like wake up and go, this fucking sucks. This is fucked up. This is fucking, dude, my heart's hurt, dude. I'm fucking bummed, dude. I'm bummed out of my mind. I don't even know what to do. And like literally have these like moments where we all look at each other and hug and cry and fucking punch the wall or whatever, dude. And then let's go get some for Kit, you know, like do that type of thing. But we were just like, just keep trucking and like, but it was like this cloud that just was like funky, dude. So if like I could do it, if I could do it, could have done it different, I would have done it like that. Like
express. Get some of it out of you.
Yes.
Yeah. I remember when Phil died, totally. Like when Phil died, it was basically my doorway to Thrasher. Like Jake came out and he was like, hey, you're going to, cause I was working for Think and he was like, you're going to work for Thrasher now. And I was just like, kind of scared of Jake at that time. And I was just like I had it good with Think, but then like, yeah, it's kind of what you said. Like, it's like, I don't know if compartmentalize is the right word, but you kind of, I mean, you're grieving forever, but like you don't, like even recently when Preston died, I didn't cry. I didn't like go, wow, you know? And I don't think there's any advice I can give anyone because I think everyone does it differently. But I do think that it is important to try to get it out like some way or the other for sure.
Yes.
Did you guys do like video after that?
Yes. Yeah. Our like industry section and we kept
411.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And there was a rail, this gnarly rail that with a death drop on one side, it was a flat rail off this loading dock with a death drop on one side that Kit got. One day there's a car in the way and he got on it and but there's a car in the way and then he passed away literally right after that. And that was something that I went and got for him.
Oh, see, that's sick.
Yes. Yeah. And I was trying to process it. You got that thing where people are like, you know, buck up thing. I think just our culture is more mature these days. Like people are able to like talk about things instead of like the tougher 90s and like just like don't cry pussy or something, you know, like
yeah,
now it's so like tough and cry when shit goes bad, like your fucking friend dies, like dude, yes, this is the moment to fucking cry. So.
Yeah. Absolutely. I remember I even hugged Wade. For some reason this sticks out so much.
Was that out Palo Alto?
That was in Redwood City, like right up the street from where Phil's mom lived.
Oh, okay.
It was like some church. I'm pretty sure you were there, right?
I don't know. I don't think I was there. I was at the Greer. There was a thing at Greer.
Uh-huh. Yep.
Dude, and then Strubing's younger brother died.
Right.
That was like within the same time, so it was freaking hard. It was rough, dude. That was a rough little chapter.
I know. Justin's been through some stuff too. It's like, it's interesting because you look at yourself and then you look at your friends and you're like, oh man, everybody's going through their version of like these horrible incidents that just pile up. And yes. I think like for yourself, you know, you were always into like classic example where you're on the trip and you don't have a lot of money. So you get the fucking Polaroid and you're documenting like that. Is a huge part of why skateboarders are lucky and fortunate because we always were documenting us, not for this purpose, but it serves this purpose. Like we have a lot of footage and photos of our friends because of what we do.
Yes.
So, you know, it's tough. You always try to look at the silver lining. How early, like, did you get into jewelry school? Was that in the city or is that a little bit later?
Like Jason Lee said the other week on the Nines Club interview that skating had this small window back then. I mean, dude, it was just like he was, you know, you're 26, dude. Woo, you're done, man. Fucking, yeah. You know, that was cool that you had a chance. Dude, it was gnarly, dude. And I'm so proud of skating for being more mature about like, whatever. Skating's so much more mature now. I love skating's more fun now than it's ever been, I think, personally. But yeah, I just was feeling that like small window energy and was like, screw it, I'm just gonna go do something else. And I always loved crystals. Like, there's lots of quartz crystals up here as a kid. And when I would find those crystals as a kid, I would just out, dude. I would just like so fascinated. And I just love go back to the mine the next day and just dig there for hours and just have my, then put them up on certain spots. And like, I would like tie string to them and make a necklace out of them. And so I was into gems, and then I started cutting gems. And that's done with the faceter where you got a crystal and then you cut it into a gem with the points on it.
Yeah.
And after that, my family in Humboldt was took the executive decision on me to like push me to like actually go for it.
Oh.
Because I was up there and I was after skating. And I clearly didn't give a shit about making money or like trying to make it with making money as a goal, because I was around a lot of money and I just was like still doing art and stuff.
Mm.
And so they sent me to the Revere Academy in the Phelan building in downtown SF, that building in SF that's on the corner that's really narrow and tall.
Yeah.
And I was in there and I thought I was taking some type of local NorCal class. Well, there was people from all over the world in this class. There was a woman from Argentina. There was people from Canada. There was people from Montana, the New England, everywhere. And they saved up years to go to this jewelry academy. And I was just like, my family just threw me in there. And I was just from NorCal. So I was like, holy shit, I'm in a professional, serious career type situation. And so I got really stoked. And then right from the start, they had the biggest jewelers teach the classes at that Revere Academy. And so there's like the gnarliest jewelers that live in SF and are just incredibly successful. And so they would teach the classes and do like things and bring in jewelry. And there was a few times where I was in there and they would have us do an assignment and like 80% of the class is just trying to wield the metal into like 90 degrees and do the things. And I could just do it. And like, the instructor one day was so stoked on these earrings that she put them on, and I'll never forget it because she's super famous, Rhonda Coriel. I mean, she is like this famous jeweler designer, won all these awards, makes these incredibly expensive stuff, has all these contracts with businesses, sponsored, just like skating. And she's like, look how it looks. And she put it on her ear, and I was like, whoa, I was like tripping, like, okay, like my hand-eye coordination with it is works or whatever, you know. Nice. And it's really cool. It's got a touch of skating in that the people that are actually doing it, it's a really small group now. Like the people that are actual jewelers and jewelry designing are a small group compared to like the industry of jewelry stores is just washed out, and that's just the job for people, and they're just showing up to work, and next year they could work at a freaking wherever, you know. But the designers are the people in there getting their hands dirty and sitting at the bench. When I moved to Maine, I entered the state competition and I got second in the state, and that was like just years after coming out of class. And I was working at the biggest jewelry store in Maine.
Wow.
I just randomly got a job there. It was cool. It was really cool.
Huh. How did you like Maine? Was Maine similar in any way to like Gold Country or like?
Yeah, cool. It was just like Grass Valley, really, except for the winters. You got to be raised in that environment to be able to be used to having those long shifts of not being able to skate and stuff. And right when I moved there, Dan Hatch opened a skate shop, and there was this little skate park that was all Masonite and wood stuff.
Mm.
Perfect mini ramp. I mean, the most absolutely perfect mini ramp. So started skating. I filmed a little video of those guys.
Yeah.
And that'll be cool to go through. I have it on my little tapes I ate or something.
Sick. Does something stick out to you that like you've traveled and went to this place that like sticks out as this like just rad spot that you got to skate? You remember Chango World?
No.
I think it was called Chango World. It's like in Chicago or somewhere. It was like in a mall, and it was like a BMX track of wood and ramps. And hey, I thought you were on that trip with Think Adrenaline. I think they went there. Like Phil has footage just going around this whole thing, and it was like you were hitting jumps and keep going. And I never went there, and I always was like, man, that looks so sick. But is there a spot that sticks out to you in your recollection of spots?
I guess I was just so in love with the East Coast skaters and Matt Reason of Park. Dude, when I went on one of those trips, we had a week of no demos, and Greg Carroll gave us the option. You can stay in Philadelphia, or you can go. Everyone wanted to go to New York. Pete BC was with us.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So everyone's like, New York, New York. Well, Pales and Matt Reason were friends. Matt Pales and I broke off from the tour van, and we stayed with Matt Reason.
Rad.
Awesome. We stayed at Matt Reason's house, and that was honestly some of the best memories I have, because those guys are so hardcore in how they just all skate from here to the next spot, you know, as they wouldn't take buses and shit like SF.
Yeah.
And I remember one day, I mean, we went to so many spots, and I was skating with so many people that I just were absolutely my heroes. I mean, those East Coast dudes are just soldier skaters, and they just skated raw and fast. And
yeah.
We're at this spot after skating who knows how many hours, literally seven or something, just all day long skating for 7 hours. And they took us to this high ollie spot that was in the video. So I was like, oh shit, dude, that's the high ollie spot. And fucking I got it, and my body, I ollied it. But when I landed, my legs were burning so bad that I couldn't even push myself back up and stand up, and I landed in a squat and just squatted and just kind of fell down. And then I just like rolled over to the curb and sat there, and I was like, holy fuck, I'm tired, dude. My legs were done. I couldn't skate anymore. I was just like so stoked. It was awesome.
Yes. Awesome. Yeah, I've heard similar stories where people went back to skate, like Robbie and Jimmy and them too, like where it's just like, dude, these dudes push hella hard the whole time, and they don't take buses. They just go spot to spot, and dude, the streets aren't that smooth out there.
Yes.
You know, so it's like, I remember when Dan Pencil moved out, he moved and lived in SF for a little bit, and he used to always be like, ah, your spots are so fucking skate park, everything's smooth out here, all the shit's rough back where we live. It's like, yeah, it's fucking cool. Well, what sparked the resurgence? Because if anybody's following you on Instagram, you're fucking ripping again and skating the... Are you in Grass Valley? You're at the Grass Valley Park, yeah. What happened? Did anything in particular, like, be like, you just saw your board one day and were like, I'm like, what happened?
Well, thank you for that compliment. Honestly, that means a lot to me. It really
Dude,
does.
It's super cool to see you ripping. Like, I don't know how it really happened, but somehow I think maybe you were watching or listening to a podcast and you reached out to me. And then I saw your thing and started following you. And I was like talking to Toad about it. And pretty soon I'm like, holy shit, dude, the guy's like, you got a lot of clips like in a short period of time. Like you're ripping.
Well, thank you. I spent so much of my life running away and trying to like be someone else, be a jeweler and just be like, and that involves heavy drinking, honestly. Yep. And when the big jewelry shop I worked at went out of business, I was already starting to do gold country and I always skated on the side. We would like skate in between our hangovers or go to the park with drinks.
Uh-huh.
And so the big jewelry shop went out of business. Friend that I love, this girl, moved away. And I was kind of just in this low point. And then I just quit drinking. It all bottled up. Everything bottled up was released. And I was focusing. I was able to process things. I was like, dude, I'm bummed that I wasted so much of my youth that I would never get back. Mm-hmm. And so I decided to get as much in as I can at whatever age. And I didn't know it at the time, but it really is something to like clear out the regrets and to come to peace with my spirit, to heal the sadness of letting myself down, about just running away and not being like involved in it anymore. And I got lots of good friends, my older friends that are skating and they're stoked. My friend Gabe Copeland, like I brought up earlier, he's on the same path. He's like just super stoked to skate and get in what he can because of the years wasted, like all the good times wasted having good times, like that song, that country song.
Animals.
Head on over to your local shop and ask for Blood Wizard. If they're out, then you can tickety-tack on down to bloodwizard.com where you have all of your conjuring needs.
What up with Gold Country? Talk yeah. about Gold Country, yeah. dude. That was like a yeah. that's an amazing really movement. That was a movement up yeah, there.
Really fun. I was making money from all these different directions. I was like supposedly probably the most successful I've ever been. I was like making money at my big jewelry job. I was working at this multi-million dollar huge jewelry job, man. And I had my own personal jewelry in multiple stores in town. And I was making money other ways with the gardening in Grass Valley.
Toad's wedding ring.
Yeah. My wedding ring, dog. It's a Hansi. It's a Hanuman special right there, dude.
Sick.
I love it. I back it all the way. Anyone needs jewelry made, wedding bands, anything, Hansi's got you covered, dude. Yeah. Killed it. Crushed it. Made it exactly how I wanted it, too. It was amazing. Yeah.
So what exactly is Gold Country? Is it more of like a lifestyle of all that stuff combined or?
When I woke up, so to speak, just was looking around and all my friends are involved in skating. And I was like, do something too. But the thing was that I was making so much money from the side that I was just playing. I was just having the time of my life. I formed a skate team. The best skaters in town, and I was giving everyone boards. I didn't even care about sales at all, but I was kind of like acting like I was gonna do a company. But really, honestly, I knew in my subconscious that I was out of touch from skating for so long that I didn't really know what I was doing if I was going to try and do it. And then I realized that everyone has skate companies now. It's not like the old days where it was rare and you could just start something small and kind of take off. So it turned into more of like a just a fun art project for our friends. And it was amazing. Eddie Marino, Ty Bancroft, Bob Hawking, Max Driscoll, Ian Fogel, Matt Hurani, and then Kane Jerome was the Grom. And Kane was this little helmet kid that was just shredding. And my friends even told me recently, they admitted to me, they were like, dude, we didn't know what you were doing. We used to laugh. We were like, why is Kane on Gold Country? And why is Hans putting him on the team? Well, Kane is killing it now.
Yeah, he rips.
Yeah, and that's what Will Fairchild said. He's like, dude, you knew that he wasn't just the Grom. They were like, dude, Hans, you're the one that spotted the talent early on. And we had the time of our lives, and it was really awesome. When you live in small towns, there's ebb and flow. So there'll be like 5 years where a bunch of group of the homies move out of town, or they're like working, or like they all have kids or something. And then like, it's all up to a few groups of people. So you really have to go with it. And that was this time in Grass Valley when everything came together.
Okay.
And it was on fire. You could go to the park and it was just going down, dude.
It's a fun park.
Yeah. And so it was like, it just happened to be at this time when I did the company that there was like a lot of rippers in town. And so it worked. It was really, really a good time.
Rad. Are you in touch at all? Do you know that guy, George, that does Iris?
No, I don't.
Okay, he moved up there, I think, like within a year, and he's got a little bowl going and stuff, and he does he makes all the stuff out of like old skateboards, like wood and stuff and whatnot. But yeah, dude. And then Gus still up there? Yeah.
Yeah, Gus is still up there here. I see him all the time.
Uh huh.
Gus is one of my old longest skate friends. Gus and I were friends before middle school, so we were friends in like fourth or fifth grade.
Wow.
I'm claiming fourth grade because I remember them. I was in fifth grade and I remember being in PE and we were like, we played against them. And like him and Gus were friends already and they already dressed like skaters. I was like BMX kid. Uh-huh. And like I remember seeing them. We were playing like dodgeball or something like that. You wouldn't remember this, Hans. I don't know why I remember it. I have like a weird memory like that. And you guys were like homies and our classroom was against your classroom or something weird. And like, it was like fifth graders against fourth graders. But Hans and Gus were like best friends for years back then.
Yeah, man. I loved Run DMC, dude.
I really like tacos.
This is like when there wasn't like the rappers and the rockers. There was no hip hop genre yet at all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there was rockers, but not really hip hop.
I loved my Run DMC shirt. And when I wore it to school and got made fun of, I was so hurt, dude. I was a little kid. But I was hurt, dude. I was like, dude, I loved Run DMC. I couldn't get it, dude. I was just like, and then Gus had a Run DMC shirt too. And he was like, dude, I love it. Like, he's like, dude, I love them too. Like, you know, like, I was just, that was like when I was like, fell in love with him. I was like, dude, yes, dude, he's my brother, dude. Oh, man.
That rules. Yeah, I saw Run DMC. Who was it? It was Public Enemy and Jazzy Jeff and the Fresh Prince opened for them. And Jazzy Jeff and the Fresh Prince, whatever they were called, they came out and somebody threw a bomb on the stage, like a firework or some M80 or something. And everyone fucking ran off. And then Public Enemy and Run DMC had to play the whole set with the lights on.
Wow.
But
you got to see Public Enemy too?
Yeah, they play. It was like Jazzy Jeff and the Fresh Prince, then Public Enemy. Yeah, it was early, dude. It was like the first Public Enemy album. I think Run DMC maybe was two albums in or something. But like that, like you said, and then like Beastie Boys come out and like slowly there's like these things, LL Cool J, and there's different things. But Run DMC for some reason kind of back then seemed a little more street and edgy. But later you start seeing Wu-Tang and like other dudes that you're like, oh, Run DMC is a little more mainstream. But in the beginning, they were fucking the shit for sure.
Yeah, they were badass, dude. Yeah. They were like tough, you know, they had that tough, solid thinking style.
Yeah.
My first show, my parents had to take me to because I was a little tiny kid. Run DMC came to Sacramento at the Arco Arena, and there was a group opening up for them, and their name was the Beastie Boys. Wow. And I didn't know. And this is when they had girls in cages
with yep.
ears and smashing them and running around and screaming. And like I said, the girls in the cages, and I was just like, my jaw dropped. I was just like, oh my God, dude. Awesome. And I was just like freaking out, dude. I was like, what? I was almost like girls at the Beatles show or something. I wasn't screaming and crying, but I was just like, of the BC Boys. And then I went and got licensed to Ill, the tape.
Yeah.
And like ever since then, it was just like, dude.
Heavy rotation.
I remember going to Hansi's house and it was like a lot of Public Enemy going on. Even some Living Color. I remember you had a Living Color, yeah. Living Color tape. They were sick, dude.
Yeah.
I listen to them sometimes. I'm like, damn, they were actually really good. Uh-huh. Not as good as Bad Brains, but I don't know. I remember Hans introduced me to some music that I liked a lot. I ended up liking a lot. Terminator Exit.
I think Tommy had a Public Enemy shirt or something. And like,
and
he was
that.
Really into De La Soul too, I think. And like anything he was doing, we were just like, oh, we got to fucking check this out.
Yeah.
I think that's how you figured shit out was the mag a lot back then, right? You'd see a photo and you'd be like, what's that? And you'd do research. It's like, there's no social media or any fucking shit like today. But yeah, it was cool too, because we were a small group. And so it felt more like if you're doing it, it's probably cool because we're all in the same group. It wasn't so like everyone's a skater. It was like more like our little club or something.
Yeah.
I remember going to the Adrenaline House and then Hansi got Tommy's first tape. I think Loose Grooves and Bastard Blues or something like that. The first one.
Yeah. Dude,
wore the shit out of that. I couldn't get enough. I'd be like, I'm coming over, Hans. I got to listen to that tape again. We gotta hear that shit. Dude, it's Tommy. Tommy's first tape was killing it. Like, I don't know. Yeah. I mean, they're all really good, but like, I just remember.
Really, huh?
I'd be like, Hansi, I'm coming over. We got to listen to that tape.
Sick.
And then go skate.
Well, is there anything on the horizon? You got anything that you're working on or like trips coming up or anything?
I've been talking with my Southern California friends about trying to go down there more next year instead of like, year and try and get in on that scene down there. It's just kicking ass. The skate scene is just really awesome. You know, my friend lives near the park where Day One always goes, and he sends me sniper shots of him filming Day One from the side. Like, so freaking jealous, dude. I love Day One so much, man. He is one of my all-time favorites, especially because his age, you know.
He's so remarkable. Like he, yeah. I mean, that stuff, did you ever see the stuff where he's like on a mini ramp and he like, I think he does a flip trick and the wheel comes off and he he's doing stuff that's like, wait, what?
He's having fun.
Yeah.
He's having fun.
Daewon's amazing.
He's humble too, which is just, I don't know. Humility always gets me. I'm like, I love it when people are humble.
Oh,
like that, they're that good. And you're just like, and you can just talk to them. Like, it's cool.
Yeah, like, for sure. Hey, do you talk to Strubin or Sen or Minor Manzuri, any of the old dudes?
Yeah, I just talked to Mike Manzuri on the phone just a few days ago, and that was cool.
Mike's but awesome.
It kind of like supernovaed at that time when adrenaline was falling apart. And it's such an emotional topic for me that I just couldn't even process it, dude. I just needed to run and run as fast as I could, dude, to like hide from myself because I just had so many feelings about it. And so I really haven't I spent a lot of time not connecting with those guys. Mm. And so I'm trying to make up for lost time. But as far as Toad and I have stayed close.
That rules.
I remember when you left though, I was super bummed. Cause like, I think it was like 99 or somewhere around there. You went to Maine and then It was like, there was a long period where we didn't hang. And I was like, my whole crew disbanded and fell apart. And then I was like trying to find my spot again, my homies again. It was kind of rough.
Sorry, dude.
No, dude, it was all good. I'm sure you didn't want to. Like, it was just like you're saying, you were going through some shit. You had to figure it out. Like, I wasn't helping you figure it out. So it was like, fuck, you got to go figure it out. Like,
check it out, Toad. I was, my girlfriend at the time needed medication for like her teeth. She just got dental work. So we were going and filling her prescription at the local Walgreens or something like that. And I was just like completely trying to like just start over. I don't know what I was doing, but I was like trying to like be a different person or something. And I saw, and I was like bored, and I just was like becoming really despondent, almost like my soul was dislocated, dude. I was like, my spirit was not inside me anymore. And so I was like, couldn't like deal with standing with her in line or socializing at all. So I just walked over to the magazine rack and I walked over and Cardiel was on the cover of Trans World. And I was like,
whoa.
And I picked it up and I just stared at it. And I was like, John's still skateboarding?
Oh,
man. I was just like, honestly, I was just like, what's my life doing? I was like, dude, I want to go skateboarding, dude. I want to go skateboarding.
Man.
John was doing the nose blunt down that handrail on the cover of like Skateboarder or something. Maybe it was Trans. It's a nose red shirt or something.
Yeah.
That's when my life, like the cracks in the seams started busting on my like running away trip and running from my own trip. That's when it was like, dude, I want to go skate. This isn't actually who I am. This 9-to-5 square at this jewelry shop where I'm just going to work there for the rest of my life and not being around skaters. Not being around skaters is rough. If you ever go through a time where you're just around the working class, the civilians instead of the skate army, dude, you don't have someone to vibe out with and laugh and fucking let it loose and be who you are and be like funky or just whatever. Like, you know, skating's accepting for who, like letting the wild side of life, you know?
Yeah.
So
agreed. Was this in Maine?
Yeah. And that's when it started cracking apart and I started being like, dude, I can't do this. And the girlfriend at the time's like, this is just life, because she was like from a working class family and I was raised by hippies. They never really went and worked for anyone else. We kind of grew our own vegetables and lived more free. Like, I never really saw my dad's like worry about losing a job. My dad's, you know, they worked for themselves and stuff. And that's when I moved back and then moved back to SF. And I tried to keep going with that culture of working. And I was working two big jewelry jobs in SF. I was working for two designers and Amy Faust in the Mission area. And then Thea Izzy in Oakland. And I was just trying to keep trucking with that. And then my friend Rich Shepherdson came to visit. and he told me about Cardiel's accident. And then that's when it broke, dude. That's when I was like, fuck this, dude. I'm going to go skateboarding, dude. I can come back and work, do these jobs later at any given time when I'm old, but I want to go skate now, dude. I want to like skate and live life. And I had this like falling down moment, like the movie Falling Down, where he just snaps in traffic. Dude, this Muni, this bus didn't show up. Oh no, I was just stressed out as can be, dude. Just barely making ends meet in the city. I was running up to catch the bus after coming from the BART underneath the bay from the Oakland job. And the bus pulled away right as I was running up, and I just came unglued, dude. And I smashed my skateboard into just splinters, dude. And I just kept smashing it on the curb, and like people cleared out around me. And I smashed that skateboard into oblivion, dude. It was just like, I had no idea how stressed and angry and just bummed I was on, not doing what I love anymore. And I went and I walked to Golden Gate Park and I bought this little flask of vodka and I fucking drank that whole thing. And there's this pond with these geese. And I sat there and I'll never forget that moment, dude. I was like, dude, I can't do this with this girl. I can't do this working class shit, dude. I'm not who I'm acting like. This isn't me, dude. I can't do this at all. And we broke up soon after. I moved out of the city. I moved back up here. And I started hanging out with all my old skate friends back up here in town. And got freedom back in my life. And was still kind of like off the rails because of the gardening life up here. You don't really have to answer to anyone, and you were making a lot of money, making up your own hours. You don't have to answer to anyone. So you could really go off the rails with alcohol.
They always say the first one's free, but watch out for the next million.
Eventually I snapped out of it. Thank God. Started skating again, reconnecting with Toad, and skateboarding's really reconnected me back with everyone, you know?
Yeah, dude. Classic story of skateboarding saves like a lot, and it helps so much. You know what I mean? Like for everything, for like pleasure and pain, right? It's like for grieving or for like
provoking the stoke.
I need to just get out and fucking do something. It's like skateboard right out the door. You don't have to go wait for a chairlift. You don't have to wait for good wave report. You don't have to do anything. You just put the board down and roll. And that's what's always been so rad about skateboarding, is like you don't have an excuse not to do it, except for you're not going to do it.
Little Timmy, you might go in there and drown.
Even if it's raining, you can go to a parking garage and go fucking roll around, you know, at least. So, dude, I just like your energy, like that you've been like, I don't know, it feels really positive and good, like where your headspace is at right now. I'm really into it.
Thank you. I appreciate it so much.
Mm.
One thing before I forget that we could throw in the edit was one of those think adrenaline trips for 2 months with Phil. There was cool moments. Like we went to a skate ramp. It was like towards the end of it, St. Louis. And the guy had one of those old 70s clear half pipes with the rib structure, the squares.
Yeah, like the Pepsi ones.
Sucked. Dude, this thing sucked, dude.
Oh, that was the worst thing I'd ever seen in my whole life.
Now, if we would have came across this demo in the first few weeks, we would have all been like, fuck yeah, it is, skating up. But like, we showed up there and we were like, lame, man. Fucking, like, didn't even give it a go. But like, Phil understood the role. He was so mature that he understood why we're on this trip, why they're paying, why Think's paying for all our meals, every hotel, why the whole thing's going. So Phil got up there and, the dude had an old fucking skateboard with like nose guard and fucking big fat wide wheels and shit. And Phil grabbed that board and shredded that vert ramp on that board. And like, I'll never forget that, because I was like, all of us were like, how's he having fun? And he was just like having so much fun. He's like, it was so lame that like he just turned it all around to be like make it awesome and fun. And like, it was like such a cool memory. And then like towards the end of it, frustrations got high and it was just like tension and this, that. You have all the different types of humans in the van. And Phil and I just glitched out and started ripping the stuffing out of the pillows that we stuffed from the hotels, started stuffing it in our coats and made ourselves all like fat Santa and like this fake hair. And we're like glitched out and we're like, happy band, happy band, happy band. And we started doing all this shit and it's in the end of the Think video. Phil and I are at the end of the video and we're like laughing like kids. Like, I guess we were kids, but like, we're like, where the tensions get so high to where people are either going to like start fist fighting or we're just going to start just like glitching, having fun, dude. And so that's what we did. We were like, took it like super fun. Happy van, dude.
Happy van.
It wasn't a happy van. It was like a stressful that's moment. Amazing. You could cut the air with a knife.
Yeah. And then,
talking with Toad earlier, I was in the van when Nick Trachea got kicked off.
Oh.
I was in the van.
Whoa.
Yeah, it was tough, dude. It was scary, honestly, is the right word.
What happened?
Well, to start it off, for people that don't know, Nick and Greg are longtime childhood friends. So yeah. It wasn't like a team writer getting kicked off. They were homies, dude. They were like, they've already been through everything together. So they got into it and it wasn't like Pales or me and Greg. Like how we just are so thankful to be sponsored and just look up to Greg with all our heart because he's this new person in our life. And it was more like longtime friends that just got into it. And I was laughing with Toad earlier because at the moment it was like, oh my God, Nick's done, dude. It's over. It's over forever. And then lo and behold, Nick and Diamond and Nick turns out to be one of the most successful guys out of that whole van.
Yeah.
Like, and on to be amazing. And who knows if like hard times make tough men or whatever they say. So like maybe that going through that made Nick want to really kick ass and do something awesome instead of like an easy road where it just keeps trucking. Who knows? I don't know. I just the thought that I went through, but
you never know who's gonna be getting where and doing what. It's like, damn, that shit blew up.
Yeah, it's awesome. I'm super proud of them and I'm super super stoked that happened. I sent him a message talking about that. I was like, dude, I was there. I remember that shit. Seemed wow. like end of the road, but lo and behold, it was just the beginning.
Yeah, man. I'm guessing we'll see each other soon.
Yeah, thank you. I'd love to be part of the old dogs, old tricks, curb skating video.
Yeah, I'm gonna put it all together here soon. So we're gonna put like I just get people to send me the clips and stuff, and then cool. It's been fun doing those.
That's awesome. Yeah, thank you. Yes, I'd love to visit. Absolutely. Thank you.
Okay.
And Skater of the Year, is that coming up or is that already
it
happened?
It just was last week. Yeah, Miles Silva and yeah. It was the party was, what was it, Friday? Yeah, Friday.
Okay.
Well, yep. You got anything else you wanted to throw in there, Toad?
I think that's Schmidting. Were you in the car that one time? Well, we hitchhiked back from Grass Valley one time. This is random. I don't even know if you should throw this in there, but we were hitchhiking back. I think it was you and John and I. And the two dudes that picked us up, they were kind of sketchy. And I think they were like shooting up heroin in the front seat while they're driving us down 49, which is a fucking super dangerous highway. A lot of people, friends we've known, have died on it and stuff. And And these dudes were like shooting up. They were like helping each other. And like, we were just in the backseat. All, what are they? We were probably like in eighth grade, seventh. I don't know. Maybe you were like in seventh grade. I was probably in eighth grade. John was like a freshman. And we were just like, I think John was the only one that knew what it was. He's like, dude, they're shooting up. And we're all, what does that mean? I don't even, what are you talking about? Like, what are they doing? Somehow they fucking let us off safe. I think we like got off early. Like, well, hey, we live right here.
Oh my God, I was just thinking about this. I'm shit you not, dude. I drove by there the other day and I drove by and I was like, it's just the memory just was all, because I wasn't thinking about anything. We were like talking and then I just driveway drove by and I was like, that's where we told them, this is our spot, bro. Get out here.
It was like lime kiln or something.
Got out and we're like, have a good day. Thank you.
It was sketchy. I don't know. I'm like tripping because I have kids now, and I'm like, if they did that, I would kill them. Like,
yeah, right.
I'd be so mad.
Different times, bro. Different times.
I know. That's what we keep saying, but it's like, I don't. Oh man, it wasn't that much different. Think about it. We weren't wearing seatbelts then either.
Yes. Most likely. Heck of a pickup truck.
Yeah, yeah. We were getting in the back of pickup trucks driving up that freeway, like people were, or highway, whatever you want to call it. Yeah, it was crazy times.
You ever run into the Karate Kid guy up there in Grass Valley? I think he lives in your neck of the woods, yeah?
He's probably the nicest guy in the real world.
Yeah, probably, for sure, yeah. Well, shit, dude, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Greg. Thank you, Todd, for lining up and just being positive about it. And thanks to everyone in the Grass Valley skate scene.
Yeah.
Thank you, everyone. Thank you, Chris Sin.
Shout out.
Thanks, Chris Sin, for never listening to this. Too busy tattooing, bro. I know how it is.
When you bring it, you got to sing it.
Greg Carroll, absolutely.
What's the skate shop called up there now? It's not Good Times anymore.
Good Times.
Oh, it's still Good Times?
Yeah.
Oh, but Gus doesn't have, he sold it or something.
No, sent a good friend of ours took over it. That's one of the original skateboard homies, one of Chris Sin's longest time friend.
Oh, and, okay.
Yeah, Andy is kicking butt in there.
Yeah. Shout out to Good Times.
Shout out.
We got Kate, Bella, Grayson, and it's just a good scene. It's a real positive. It's in a real positive chapter for it.
Did you ever see the wooden full pipe they had there for a minute?
No.
You weren't living there, I don't think.
It was so gnarly, dude. There was like a window in it. And we would go up there and drink. And like, I think Gordon Eckler or somebody did the whole thing where it whips around and the board almost... But yeah, it was crazy. I don't know if I can find a photo of it, I'll send it to you. It was pretty insane. But he had it there at the warehouse right by the shop, I think.
Awesome.
Yeah, Gus built a full pipe. It was nuts. I think it's on like one of the first low card covers or something. Peabody had a photo or something.
Okay, that sounds right.
Oh, and Jake Charbs. Shoot, I forgot.
Charbs.
Shout out.
Charbs.
One of the
He's super good.
Homies up here. Absolutely talented. It's incredible.
Rest in peace, Nargi. Fucking big Narg.
Absolutely.
Wes Cooper.
Wes.
Shout out.
Definitely.
Hell yeah. Well, dude, I appreciate this. This was fun. And thanks for being a part of it too, Toad. Like having the three-way is a nice dynamic. I don't do these ones too often.
Yeah, no, I'm glad it worked out. Hopefully I didn't talk too much. I wanted to hear Hansi speak too. So I'm like, I'm hyped on everything you said. There's a lot of stuff I learned. So I'm like, this is awesome.
Yeah.
All right. And maybe we'll dig out that clip at Toad and we'll put it in where you're talking. Like, the world just needs to know the Toad.
Yeah. Hansi found it? Yeah.
One thing real quick. Have you guys thought about that fucking tail slide to fakie at China Banks? How hard that is. Do like think about sliding up there with the gap and the hang up and then coming in fakey
so into the too. Tranny, not out to flat, into the tranny.
So fluid.
Dude, that was so insane, dude.
Yeah. It's pretty much everybody's favorite clip because when I did the China Banks documentary, I'd ask people and they'd be like, well, Phil, we already know. So like, you know,
he was like, got the tail slide and it just wasn't like, He's like, I'm getting the tail slide to fake, you know. I wasn't there, but I was just like, dude, that is just mind-blowing, dude. It's pretty much like impossible physics in my mind.
It's fucking... You know? And how fluid, like Toad said, like how he did it was amazing.
Well, thank you.
Hell yeah. We'll talk soon. Stay in touch.
Okay. Thank you very
much. Thank you, Hans.
Thank you,
baby. Love you guys.
Later.
Later.